Vision 7 Radio Network welcomes Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes, heard every Monday at 11 a.m. and 11 p.m. Eastern Time. Using nearly 200 years of abundant and consistent afterlife evidence, quantum physics, consciousness research, and ancient writings, we seek to understand who and what we are, how reality works, the nature of God, and the meaning and purpose of our lives. Join Roberta weekly to better understand our one reality and gain insights into how we can make the most of the glorious eternal beings that we are.
Welcome to Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Joyous conversations about what the afterlife evidence and modern science combine to tell us is true about our one reality. You have nothing to fear. You are eternal and you are perfectly loved. Knowing the truth changes everything. Now, here's Roberta.
Welcome to Seek Reality. I'm Roberta Grimes and I'm delighted that you're with us today. You know, one of the wonderful fruits of my having shared these Seek Reality programs with you over the past 6.5 years is the fact that I've made so many friends in the process. There are listeners who reach out to me often. They're sort of like pen pals now. And there are authors and experiencers and others who have been my guest over the years, and they still keep in touch. I love being part of so many wonderful people's fascinating lives. Our guest today, who's here for the second time, is Patrick J. McCulloch, who lives not far from me and who by now has become a personal friend. Patrick is a cognitive behavioral counselor, certified neurofeedback provider, and international consultant and trainer. Early in his career, he was a lead trainer for one of the U.S. neurofeedback provider. Starting that sentence again. Earlier in his career, he was a lead trainer for one of the U.S. Department of Education's regional training centers, and he worked extensively as a consultant in the areas of alcohol and drug abuse, organizational development, and community mobilization for planned social change. So you can see he's done a lot of things. He worked principally for the U.S. Department of State and the Organization of American States, but he's worked also for a number of other organizations. And he has worked, this is such important work, he has worked in the criminal justice system with high-risk offenders on probation. He grew up in a rural area of north central Mexico in a bilingual and bicultural family, and his early family life was unstable, violent, and traumatic. Then his alcoholic father abandoned him in an orphanage while his mother fled to her home country, which was, of course, the United States. Eventually, he attended high school and college here, and there he obtained a degree in psychology and sociology. But with such a tumultuous background, Patrick let himself be lured into an abusive cult that he managed to escape after more than 4 years. He's the first victim of a cult that I ever have known, and I find his tale of it fascinating. Eventually, Patrick's mostly awful early life became, it's amazing, his lighthearted and entertaining book, which I really enjoy. It's called The Face of the Iguana, Freedom from Toxic Beliefs, A Journey in Healing and Transformation. We talked about this book last spring, and I asked him to come back and talk about something which is really important to all of us, which is spiritual growth. If anyone can talk about that, it's my friend Patrick. So welcome back, Patrick. I'm so glad to have you here again.
Thank you, Roberta. It's fantastic to be here again with you.
So please, for people who haven't heard our previous interview, let's talk a little about yourself, just briefly. Your mother is American, or was American, your father, Mexican, and he's a wealthy person or a powerful person in some way, as I recall.
Yeah, actually, my father was American citizen, but he grew up He grew up in Mexico since he was a kid, so basically he considered himself Mexican, or he considered himself to be a part of the Mexican culture, in that he was. My background obviously was tumultuous from the get-go. It was an abusive alcoholic family. There were issues of abandonment. I was abandoned put into an orphanage because they didn't know what to do with me. And this was after my mother fled to the United States after divorcing my father. And so I tried to integrate myself into life as best I could in spite of the sense of abandonment and the sense of trauma that I had experienced. And so I was able to finally get a chance to have my father send me to the States to go to school. And so I completed basically my schooling here in the United States, which was a godsend really for me.
Now, there was a period there where I found your early life, and maybe if someone just lives a perfect life and joins Boy Scouts and does nothing, maybe they have a boring childhood or something, but I found your whole account of your childhood pretty fascinating. The head was like a Catholic or something orphanage, and the head of it was abusive, but you ended up loving him and thinking he was very formative. Tell us a little about that, because things look very different when you're in the middle of something bad. Sometimes you can find the good things in it too.
Well, actually, the priest was not abusive. It was the people under him that put there in terms of like the prefect of discipline or the prefect of students or the whole life of the orphanage. The directors of the orphanages, and there were many of them, they were in many instances quite abusive in the sense that the paddlings with the big paddle with the holes in it was quite frequent, and you had to actually pull down your pants, and they had to actually spank you on your buttocks, and the screams were just it kind of reminds me of a picture of the Inquisition that I saw, and it's like it was like a torture that was just so uncalled for, and as I look back on it, I really just really don't understand it, but at that time I suppose they did what they only knew what to do, and that was to impose corporal punishment upon these kids, and these kids, and I include myself I guess in that sense, were abandoned kids. They were orphans. They were they had no sense of family life whatsoever, whereas I did come from a family. I knew what family life was like. So in spite of that, though, the priest was a very saintly man, in my opinion. I understand from individuals that I know that there has been a petition to the Vatican to initiate a inquiry into his possible beatification. So
really? Wow.
Right. And so there is a movement going on, and I do believe that he absolutely deserves it, because he came from a place of unconditional love, and he sacrificed his whole life to bring these kids in. I think the fault perhaps lies in his not being made aware of what the people under him were doing, and I can't say that I don't blame him, but at the same time, of course, he should have been a little bit more vigilant. But
yes,
again, he was very, very busy. He was traveling all over the place trying to raise money for the orphanage. So in spite of all of the abuse, I saw the unconditional love that was coming from this man was just incredible. And I met with him later on when I was an adult, and that light that he had in him just glowed even more. And I go, wow, this man is a giant, a spiritual giant.
Wow. That's wonderful.
Yes. And so, yeah.
Was he why you decided you wanted to be a priest? Because at some one point you also decided to be a priest.
Well, no, that was my doing.
Tell us why you wanted to be a priest after all.
Oh yeah,
all this.
Well, I decided. Well, I'm going to have a way out of here, and that was one way for me to get out of that that environment that I was in, because I was totally misplaced, to be honest about it. So I did. I went down to the seminary and I put my name in the hopper, and they said, "Oh, okay, yeah, well, I guess I passed the initial interview." And they did take them young back then.
I don't know. You were a teenager, right?
I was preteen.
You were preteen.
I was preteen. Oh, I was 11, 12 years old.
Yeah, wow.
And it was a total change of environment. It was a step up, let's say, because the food was better. There was no corporeal punishment. However, that was my first induction into fear-based belief systems.
Yeah.
Not that I didn't get that earlier in my life through the wonderful Baltimore Catechism and all of the other indoctrinations that the church espouses and or espoused back then. It's started. It just reinforced the fear-based belief systems that the church had had actually very successfully programmed into my subconscious mind.
And, but then you decided you were not going to be a priest, that it wasn't quite for you.
Exactly. And that was a decision that I made. And I told my father, I want to go to the States. I want to get an education. And so I was insistent on it. I had already become now an adolescent. I was about 13. And by the grace of God, I was able to go to the States, and it was like the Statue of Liberty welcomed me. It was like total freedom. And the Statue of Liberty has so much meaning to me. And you may think, well, wait, you're not an immigrant. No, I'm not. But you know, it was freedom for me. It was freedom from psychological and mental and physical abuse. And I was just like, oh my God, this is just an incredible new life that I have.
We really don't understand just how wonderful it is in this country.
We really, really don't. really don't. You don't know how much I appreciate the United States of America.
Well, we appreciate you too, dear. But I think that's something that it's a useful reminder, because a lot of us just take for granted it's the water we swim in is freedom. And
yes,
and the right not to be abused or starved or in any way treated negatively. And that's very rare in the world. So
yes, it sure is.
I'm glad you were rescued.
Yes, for sure.
And so you went to high school and college, but then you ended up in a cult. How did that happen?
Well, I went to, actually, before the cult, I was in, I had a very, very good job in a juvenile justice system in another state, in a Western state, and you know, I had a wonderful job. It was very promising. It was a job that was I very much enjoyed and was successful in. But the issue of not having dealt with the trauma of the abuse as a child compelled me to find healing. And some people that are vulnerable, like I was at that time, will seek out any form of a therapy or a organization or a set of paradigms or tenets or principles that will help them feel better about themselves. And so I guess I went down that route. I went down that path. And this cult just basically started answering all kinds of questions, you know, regular questions like, why am I here? What's the purpose of life? So on and so forth. But in addition to that, and I think more importantly, I wanted to be healed. I wanted to be healed from the hurt that I had experienced as a child. However, I was led into a street with no return. I mean, it was a dead-end street, and it was straight into negativity, and I found myself absolutely entrapped. And through fear and through trepidation and threats, I was kept there, and I was forced to work for the organization, or else there would have been what they put, how they put it was, if you dare leave you know, you're very special. And the reason why you're special is because that's because you are here. If you were picked by the quote unquote cosmic beings to be here. And so if you dare even try to leave, and this was just not a message to me, it was a message to everybody, then you're going to have the most horrible karma. You'll even go through what's called the second death. So you had this incredible psychological death sentence imposed upon you. And
So here you are. You're a college graduate, obviously very bright, and we have a wonderful job. And it's hard for people to imagine what the hook was. Now, they offered healing, so they gave you a sense of answers to your questions that were at first comforting, right? But the, yes, the leader also claimed to be in contact with aliens or some greater beings,
right?
And claimed that he and his little remnant there were in some way special. What did he say?
Well, the whole thing was that the cult leader was transmitting these messages from the cosmic beings. And so it was just like the spokesperson, the messenger, say, of all these cosmic beings that encompass all of the universe, so on and so forth. I mean, it was just, it was so ridiculous. At first, I contemplated afterwards, I thought about it, and I said, how did I ever even be seduced into accepting this? And the only thing that I can come up with is the methods that they used to seduce me. It wasn't just seduction by verbal commands or verbal verbiage. It was actually seduction at the subconscious level through chanting and through singing and through, and I'm talking about hours of chanting. And as I became a neurotherapist and discovered the power of brainwaves and the entrainment of, especially at the theta level, the hypnagogic level of the brain, what they did, and they did it very, very, very cleverly, is actually reprogrammed my subconscious mind. And once your subconscious mind basically is your hardware and your software, uh-huh, and we operate basically from a program that's been programmed into our subconscious mind. So that's basically what they did. They were very clever at using these subtle but very powerful techniques to indoctrinate and program or reprogram all of the cult members with new information that eventually turned into a very toxic soup of anxiety and depression. I did enter into periods of depression and anxiety, panic attacks. And it wasn't just me. It was, I saw this in the rest of my cult members or cult mates. And most of them also had stories of abuse. They had stories of abandonment. So I go, oh, I get it now. It's the vulnerable ones that are most susceptible. And so I became very, very vulnerable.
So if people listening are thinking, I could never have that happen to me, it's quite possible that you could. How would people who are, you know, we all have imperfect childhoods and stuff. If people feel damaged from childhood and maybe they haven't fully healed from it, how would they recognize that the what looks as if it's going to help them really isn't going to help them? Are there any signs in retrospect that people could find that might say you're going in the wrong direction, this won't help?
The main question to ask is, am I getting the help, the professional help that I need in order to deal with these issues that I have dealt with in the past and that I'm still dealing with? The second piece to that is what these people are saying, does that resonate with me at the soul level? And is it positive?
Positive is important, yes.
And positive is critical. Because what they did was they first gave all the positive stuff, all the beautiful stuff, you know, the just wonderful, you're going to go straight to, you're going to make your ascension and you're going to go to heaven, and because you're going to be a missionary for the whole universe, blah, blah, blah. So those were the like the candy that was coated with all this rich, sugary, delightful tasting substance. But right deep as you bit into that candy was the bitterness of despair and anxiety and depression. So they had to sugarcoat it first in order to attract you. And then once they got they had you, then they used guilt and fear to keep you.
That's such an important point. The only thing, no matter what your problem is, the only thing that can help you at all is perfectly love-based teachings and practices. Anything exactly. that feels fearful or negative is just going to trap you into more despair and negativity yourself. And that really strikes me from your book. I mean, that's really what you learned from all this.
Yes. And, you know, Roberta, I really must say I am really grateful that I had this experience. Would I go through it again? No.
No.
Oh, no. No way in the world would I want to go through that again. But it taught me so much, and it brought forth information that I think will probably help a lot of people. I've already heard from so many people who said, I've read your book and I just love it and it has helped me so much. And I think from experience comes the fruit of knowing and of knowledge and of understanding that I think a lot of us need in our healing process. And I just want to say, and this is a message to everybody, if the message you receive, whether it is from the pulpit in your local church or from some teacher that's out there, if the message does not resonate with you and it is lacking in a deep positivity, then stop and question it. You do not have to accept anything that anybody says just because they say it or because it's printed or because it's announced or you see it on the TV. That does not make truth. Truth is what resonates with your soul, and truth is what feeds your soul and brings you into that state of unconditional love.
The thing about the problem we face, many of us in the United States and in the Western world, is that Christianity, which is we're told is, you know, this is Jesus, this is perfect stuff, it's fear-based. The teachings of mainstream Christianity are fear-based. Now, they get sugar-coated in a lot of sort of lighter-weight churches, but at the back of it all is you are so unworthy, Jesus had to go and suffer and die for you, or God could never forgive you. That is the most fear-based, scary, horrible thing you could be told about yourself that exists. I'm that horrible. I'm that negative. I'm that evil that if Jesus didn't die, God could never forgive me. What does that tell you about God? What does it tell you about you? So I think one of the things that we've talked about too, you and I, is just how dangerous these teachings are to people. You don't think it's a cult. But if you have a minister or a preacher who is telling you things about if you leave this church, you know, you're damned, you're going to hell, whatever. Flee that. Do not allow that to get into your mind because it poisons you and it's not true. It's frankly not true.
Those are the first warning signs. If you are threatened in any way and you are not, free will is a universal law.
Yes.
And free will cannot be violated. And your free will is sacred. If you are held against your free will and that could be through threats or through intimidation or through fear or whatever, then that's your first warning sign that you are in a toxic belief system and you do have the right to walk out that door. And you should, for your own sake, walk out that door. It's what I call terrorism at the pulpit. And
yes. Oh,
I'm trying not to be critical because, you know, Roberta, these people that have also been indoctrinated.
Uh-huh.
They That's have right. also, they have gone through the whole period of being indoctrinated into what has been years and years and centuries of traditions. And today I heard a wonderful quote from a woman called Darshana Patel, and she says, tradition is peer pressure from dead people.
Yes, that's true. I'll have to remember that. Tradition is peer pressure from dead people.
And, well, those dead people, okay, so they're gone. They're I'm sure they're reincarnated or wherever they are.
Right.
But these are paradigms. They're ancient paradigms that are paradigms that had to deal with death and fear and anxiety and killing. And there's no reason for us to accept all of these traditions just because it's been handed down from generation to generation. It just doesn't make any sense. What makes sense is that which conforms to unconditional love, which is the pure essence of not only our being at our core, because we are sparks of the divine, but from source. And I like to refer to God as source, because God is that which cannot be described. The source cannot be explained in any way whatsoever because it's unexplainable. But what we can do is we can be in touch with that love, that pure unconditional love, which can be felt. And when you feel it, then you know that you are in touch with your own God source within you.
Yes. We have talked here, just briefly, everyone, on Seek Reality. We have talked about the fact that consciousness is all that exists. Consciousness at its highest vibration is pure love, and that's the source, that's God. At its lowest vibration, it's fear, anger, hatred, all of the ishy emotions.
Correct.
That consciousness is you, and you are vibrating somewhere in the range between deep fear and perfect love, and we come to Earth to raise our personal vibrations higher. Now, the kind of experience, frankly, that Patrick had is one, the series of experiences. This is a lifetime designed by someone who was probably pretty advanced to begin with, or they wouldn't have let him do it. But he designed a lot of garbage into his life. Just the way you would go to a gym and say, I'm really going to try hard now to stretch my muscles and grow. And that's what these experiences have done for him. Horrible to go through. But on the other hand, I mean, you can tell reading. I love your book. I recommend your book. It's called The Face of the Iguana by Patrick J. McCulloch. And what you see as you read his book, number one, it feels very real to you. I found it actually very enjoyable to read because I got to be you. You know, it was just a fun experience. But even the horrible things were happening, you didn't dwell on those things. But you can see the growth that already has happened as a result of these things, and you wrote it. You've grown more since then.
Yes, definitely. And Roberta, I reached a point. Actually, it's really interesting how things happen. Source or my life plan dictated that I would slowly start to reintegrate myself back into some form of spirituality after 2 decades of walking through a spiritual desert, so to speak, and it was like one book came after the other. I studied physics. I studied science. I studied Taoism. I studied everything that had to do with spirituality from a different point of view. And that was mainly from a Taoistic point of view. I love the Taoistic philosophy of life. Well, and that progression, it was like I had this menu of books or information that kept flowing into my life rather. And I finally came to a point where I said, okay, I know that cult was New Age, and I don't even like that term New Age.
I don't either. Not at all.
It just doesn't resonate. I think transformational information is what we're talking about here. The new information of transformation. And so I finally came to the point where, okay, I'm going to start doing some investigating, but I'm going to set some limits. It has, first of all, the research that I am engaging right now has to be evidential. It has to be positive. And it has to be impacting at the level where it's going to help human beings. Those were my limits. And I set those as the criteria for a journey that I embarked on to research mainly afterlife, the afterlife. And that started out with near-death experiences. But before that, I had a spiritually transformative experience. And it's really interesting. I describe it in my book. And most of my family and friends who have read my book, or even they don't even dare discuss this incredible spiritual experience that I had. First of all, because perhaps what they're thinking is, well, yeah, you know, saints are the only ones that have these transformative experiences.
Yeah, no.
And well, and I'm certainly no saint. I'll tell you that right now. I'll be the first one to tell you that. But it was one morning, I was still asleep, and it started out like it was a dream, but suddenly it became more than a dream. I was just overcome with a feeling of pure unconditional love and the peace that I experienced right away. My consciousness came to the words, peace, the peace that passeth all understanding.
Yes.
And I go, now I know what that is. And then I was in front of this, I don't know how to describe it, this being that emitted light, that had the most bluish violet eyes that I can't even describe the color. And I looked at this being, and he said, I come in love to you, and I had this feeling that I knew him. I had known, but I couldn't place where I knew him. And I was just starting out in a new stage in my career as a cognitive counselor. He says, Michael or Patrick, I want you to go over there, and I want you to go over to that man over there named Michael. And I said, he says, I want you to take his hands. And then I hesitated. I said, and this was all telepath. He says, take his hands. So I took his hands. And as soon as I took his hands, I smelled alcohol coming off his breath. And I heard this being say to me, you have the power in you that is source to able to facilitate this man and many others healing. Heal them now.
Wow.
And that whole experience, and I'm not giving it even justice the way I'm describing it now, because it was so transformative. I was basically just paralyzed in my bed because I could not move, nor did I want to open my eyes because I didn't want that experience to go away. And
one of the things people don't understand is that what happened to you is not uncommon. I would say by midlife, just from because a lot of people will tell me their stories, I think by midlife, at least half of us have had an extraordinary experience, one that we cannot explain, one that involves beings or sensations or out of body or something that makes us know we have contacted the divine. It's normal. And so I perfectly believe that. And what you're, you know, I'm sure that probably was your guide that you were talking with. Yes. And it's just, it's wonderful. Thank you for sharing that. But no, I totally know that it was real. No question about that.
And it was such a gift. You know, and the first thing, of course, that comes to my mind is, well, why me? And then
why not you?
And then, yeah. And what I get back telepathically is, and why not you?
Right.
If anybody's qualified, you certainly are qualified from what you went
right.
through.
And right.
and that's what set me off on this incredible journey of 6 years of I've done 6 years of intensive afterlife research. And I'll tell you, the two books that completely collapsed every single bit of PTSD that I had been carrying around and which popped up intermittently in the past 50 years was Journey of Souls and Destiny of Souls by Dr. Michael Newton.
Yeah, a lot of people feel very strongly about those books.
And what is important about those two pieces is that they are evidential. The database initially when he wrote those two books was 7,000 patients and he was an atheist. He didn't believe in any of this New Age stuff.
Yeah, a lot of the best researchers turn out really to be very skeptical. In fact, I don't think you can be a good researcher unless you are.
Exactly. And he said, I went into this kicking and screaming. And I can understand that. I could totally understand. I mean, he was a clinical psychologist and a clinical hypnotherapist. He didn't want to have anything to do with this all this woo-woo stuff. And then he got in touch with all of these patients that wanted to get some relief through hypnotherapy, and they started talking about other experiences in past lives, and he just let them talk. He says, okay, I don't believe any of this stuff, but if they want to go into that, that's fine. If it helps them, that's great. One of his first patients was a man that had a pain in his back, and all kinds of medical exams proved that he had absolutely nothing to justify or explain why he had that pain. And he reported in hypnotherapy, he says, oh, I've been stabbed. I've been stabbed in the back. And Dr. Newton said, well, tell me about it. Where are you? Oh, I'm in the trenches. What year is it? 1917. I'm in World War One. And he took him through this. He got his name, his regiment number, and all the information. And meanwhile, this man is just having this anxiety because of that he's re-experiencing this stabbing and his transition. And finally, he calmed him down. He took him out of the experience. And as soon as he got out of that experience, the man says, my pain's gone. I have no more pain.
Wow, isn't that great?
But then Dr. Newton... He called the war office in Britain. He gave him the man's name and his the approximate age and where he had been stationed, because he gave that information in this hypnotherapy session, and the war office confirmed every single detail and even said where that man was buried.
Wow.
And the man,
I loved his books too. For me, the problem was partly that they were inconsistent with what a whole body of other very evidential material. But I came to understand why that was and how it all fits together. But then I decided I'm not going to burden people with that now. So I just tell people read those two books, Journey of Souls and Destiny of Souls, when you already sort of understand quite a bit about what's going on, because they do add immeasurably information and grounding to the basic information that we all get when we do afterlife research, for sure.
Yes, and I think one of the rules that is really important to consider when you're reading any of this stuff, if it resonates with you, accept it, take it in, take a look at it. If it doesn't resonate with you, you have the free will to just let it go and not accept it. And if it resonates with your soul, find out how it resonates and what that means to you. I think this, and then I say that in my book, The Face of the Iguana. Anything that I say here does not mean that I'm the authority, and no one is the authority. Accept only that which resonates with you, and the rest you can just leave it. And I think that's another very important piece of information that I think all of us need to exercise when we are reading. It's really interesting. In one book channeling, I was reading about it, and in that the author says, "Well, channeling, you have to take everything with a grain of salt. Just because something comes through does not mean that it's absolutely the truth. And if it is, it all depends what those people that are being channeled, what book they're reading." And that doesn't mean the channeler. It means the voices that are coming through them. You know,
yes,
because
but,
in,
One of the important problems with channeling is that there are many beings who are third, fourth, or fifth level, but they aren't expert at all, and they don't know what is above them. And there's a lot of erroneous information out now that have come through people who've recently died, and they were not that expert, but they, you know, I mean, if you're being channeled by your mother or by someone who is claiming you're a big shot, you want to show you are. And a lot of what they say is simply not consistent with the rest of the evidence. So
yes, that's true.
I caution people about those books. Yeah.
Yes. And I think another assumption that we all make is that once you die, you become this all-knowing being.
That's what I mean. They don't know any more than they do
before.
That's
not true at all. I mean,
yes,
you are the same personality. You have the same body of information that you had when you're alive. And that's what the research is showing. And life continues because consciousness is energy, and energy cannot be either created nor destroyed.
That's right.
And so we go on after we drop this body, we go on learning, and learning does not stop just because your body's been dropped. Our souls learn continuously, and that's part of our path. And I think this would really, especially in these days before the holidays, we have to understand that those who have our family members who have gone on, who have made their transition, we have to realize and understand that they're not gone. They're here. They're here with us. They're very much alive, if not more alive than we are.
One sense I have had is that more and more as I talk with people is that knowing the truth is critical to people really dropping the fear, because fear of death is the base fear. And what you've done is which is to make yourself an expert on the afterlife seems to have been very empowering for you, just as it is for other people who do it.
It was, yes, it was a godsend, Roberta. It really, really was. And it opens up all these doors that, first of all, you don't even realize that exist. And it brings up the quote that the master has said over and over again: "Know the truth, and the truth shall set you free." And it really has applied in my case, and I'm so grateful for that.
Yes, well, so am I. But I think that's universally true. One of the things that we're looking at is coming up with more efficient ways to help everyone know the truth about the fact that our lives are eternal, and our eternal lives are wonderful beyond our imagination. Because
exactly.
When enough people know that, it's going to change everything for all of us. It will uplift the entire planet. What's next for you? Are you working on another book? What are you planning to do?
I'm working on another book. I am been named as part of the board of directors of the Santa Fe Institute for Mediumship and Spiritual Studies in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Yeah, and I'm going to be the director of training for some of the events that will be held. And I'm writing also a novel that is is incorporating a lot of the information that I've researched into as far as the afterlife is concerned. It's like a gentle introduction to the general public on near-death experiences, transformative spiritual experiences. But, of course, I'm going to add some intrigue with that as well. And I'm never written a book on this specific topic, especially in a novel. So I'm kind of experimenting with it, but it seems to be going in the right direction. I'm just turning it over to my higher self, and my higher self seems to be doing pretty good with it. So I'm not going to let him. I'm not going to let my higher self get in the way. So I am going to let my higher self guide me that way, and he is. Or G, or whatever.
One of the things that we come to understand is we really don't write anything. We aren't really able to. It's all channeled. Because it's all channeled, that's very freeing. We could just allow it to happen. We don't have to, you know, guide it. Because if we try, we screw it up. In my experience, it's just up to them. They do a much better job than we can.
Yes, it's exactly right. When I try to impose my my ideas on how it should be, all of a sudden everything falls apart and I go, oh, now where do I go?
That's right.
I just give it up and then it comes. I just surrender.
Actually.
And I think surrendering is one of the key words here. And sometimes we just have to surrender to source, to the universe, to the eternal wisdom. And just say, here I am. Let me have what I need right now to know what the next step is or what I need to have to grow and learn at this moment in time and space.
That is beautifully said. I'm so sorry. We're coming to the end of our time now. So we'll have to do this again.
Yes.
We sort of have lunch and say, okay, let's talk this. What are we going to talk about? Okay, we'll talk about that next time. And so when you have a book a little farther along, we'll talk about possibly having you come back.
Okay, Roberta, that sounds good.
Meanwhile, consider yourself hugged. And
likewise,
everyone. This has been Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. I'm so glad you could be with us today. Please never forget that you are a powerful, eternal being. You never began and you never will end. And when you really get that, it changes everything in your life for the better. Next week, here for the 29th time in 6.5 years, will be our wonderful friend, Dr. R. Craig Hogan. Craig is the world's leading expert on the greater reality, what's going on and how it all fits together, and he's devoting his life to spreading the truth as broadly as he can. One of his projects is the Afterlife Research and Education Institute, or AREI. Lovely logo. I was part of designing it. AREI has put on and sponsored meetings and Zoom groups of all sizes all over the world, and I'm really excited to hear more about what it's up to now. Also, next week, Craig is going to announce to us that he has not one, but two much, much needed books coming out in the summer of 2020. I've seen an early preview of his new books. He's got 700 plus pages. He has to pare it down to two books, but it looks terrific. I'm excited about this. And he's going to introduce to us what his books are about next week. So we'll break some news here on Seek Reality. And I'm excited to be doing that. This is the most fun, by the way, you could ever possibly have. So I hope that you get to be a guest too, because I really love being part of the lives of all these wonderful people who are doing so much good in the world. But please then join us next week. This week, our guest here for the second time has been Patrick J. McCallick, that's the pen name of a friend of mine. And Patrick had a traumatic, but at the same time, he had a fascinating international childhood and youth. And he has triumphed dramatically over all his travails. I think you should read his book just to see what people can go through and they come out of it triumphant. What an amazing thing. His book is actually positive and uplifting. I enjoyed reading it because it's, you know, none of it is depressing. It's all uplifting. This is all part of making a wonderful adult man. It's called The Face of the Iguana, Patrick J. McCallick's work. His life since that time has been a process of deep awakening and uplifting spiritual growth, and a lot of that came just from the very things that were so hard for him to go through. And of course, that's the point of our coming here at all. He designed a difficult life, and he's using it beautifully. Actually, I'm enjoying watching this very tough and resilient man turn inward now and really, really grow spiritually in the latter part of his life. As you know, my own nonfiction books are Liberating Jesus, My Thomas, The Fun of Dying, The Fun of Staying in Touch, The Fun of Growing Forever, The Fun of Living Together, and in February of 2020, The Fun of Loving Jesus, Embracing the Christianity that Jesus taught. And the Christianity that Jesus taught, let me make clear, has no fear in it whatsoever. It's only love and joy. For young children, there's the fun of meeting Jesus and pretty soon the fun of growing with Jesus. You can order all my books through bookstores or on Amazon.com, and the adult books are also available as audiobooks. If you want to talk about anything with me, any of my books, or if you have a question or anything, you can always contact me through the contact block on robertagrimes.com. I used to be able to say if it takes more than 24 hours to get an answer, send flowers. I can't say that now. Sometimes it takes almost a week, but I do answer still. I answer every email. Past episodes of Seek Reality are available on webtalkradio.net, realrevolutionradio.com, iTunes, the iHeartRadio Network, and on a number of other stations, including those in the wonderful Dream Vision 7 radio family. There's also a free app in the iTunes App Store, which you can get. And apparently Seek Reality just appears there every week, so that's very simple. And of course, if you enjoy our weekly conversations, you might also want to check out my blog at robertagrimes.com. If you sign up, it'll come to you every week. I use those blog posts to work through a lot of the issues that we talk about on Seek Reality. And there's more space, of course, there for analysis, so we can go deeper. I'll tell you, I didn't even think I'd be able to keep this up, but I've done it now for a year and a half, and I think I can do it every week from now on. I get so energized by the people who come there, who comment, who have made friends with each other and with me, and we really have a good time. So every Sunday morning, there's a new blog post. Come and check it out. Meanwhile, everyone, this has been Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Please enjoy and please make the most of this coming week in our one reality, knowing that you are a perfect, eternal being, and you, most of all in the universe, you are infinitely loved.
You've been listening to Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Roberta blogs and answers questions at robertagrimes.com. Join us every week as we explore what the afterlife evidence and modern science combine to tell us is true about the one reality we all share. Knowing the truth changes everything.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.